Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Anna, good morning.
And good morning, Bob.
I'm wondering if anybody but us remembers Operation Gambit. Right.
It's so true. You know, I had to actually jog my memory. You think of Operation Silver Shovel rings a bell. Some of the other family secrets, the mob trial, that rings a bell. But this was Operation Gambit, and it was significant. This week was the major indictment released, and it was a big deal all across not only the city but the state, Bob. It was this significant in that it was exposing a web of corruption. The feds were connecting the dots between City Hall, the courthouse, lawyers, political players, powerful people, the state house even, all kind of this interconnectivity of it all, and it gave them more places to look for the future, frankly, so it launched other investigations. Gambit was short for gambling attorney. Robert Cooley was a attorney for the mob who grew a conscience, turned federal informant. He walked into the feds one day and said, I'm done, I can't do it. Then he recorded several years of conversations with powerful people all across the state. And the indictments became public December 20th, 1990. It sent shockwaves across the city because these were some of the people you thought were touchable. They were the powerful people, kind of feared a little bit because of their power, including a sitting federal judge went down and several politicians, prominent politicians. What was additionally shocking, though, and you'll remember this, Bob, is that Operation Gambit was going on blatantly, all this corruption, all this, like, you know, this boldness around it. While there was a stream of indictments coming out in Operation Greylord, which will be more memorable to people, they were announcing, like, this flood of indictments, 92 people over time, and it was public knowledge. The feds were, like, investigating everything, yet Gambit, the crew there, was still involved in their illegal activities. We pulled a clip from WTTW's Chicago Tonight broadcast. Former U.S. State's Attorney Thomas Durkin was on that panel, and he was asked about that. Well, this is so bold, isn't it?
Yeah, John Calloway with the questions there. I now remember the name Robert Cooley. I do remember Cooley.
So central to the whole thing, and spent years wearing a wire and exposed, sent 24 people to prison, very powerful people across the state, and sent a message, you would say, to a lot of people as well.
And now back to 1965 and Gail Sayers' rookie year. What a year it was
for
him.
So cool, Bob. 60 years ago, go back if you have a chance today, just look at it, watch it, because it was, you know, a remarkable bear pulled off something truly remarkable. Future Hall of Famer Gail Sayers scored 6 touchdowns in a single game this week, 60 years ago, tying an NFL record that day at Wrigley Field. Yeah, you're right. He was a rookie at the time. He was being coached by George Papa Bear Halas in his final year with the Bears as head coach. And even more remarkable, the field that day was icy. It was slippery. Players were falling all over the place. They just looked like they were out of control, but not Gail Sayers. When you watch that tape, Sayers looks like he's gliding across the field, just so smooth, and making his way into the end zone, not once, not twice, Bob, but 6 times.
He was something. Gail Sayers, only a 5-year career. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's kind of sad when you think about it, because his knee injuries, debilitating knee injuries, Bob, just took him out. There weren't the same surgical options or medical options that we have today for players to come back from that kind of thing. But about a decade later, Gail Sayers became the youngest player ever to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, age 34, and well-deserved.
This week in 1968, the first Sears Christmas book came out. Was that the catalog? Was that what it was?
Yeah, so the true story is there was a Christmas catalog starting in 1933, Bob, but then they turned it into the Christmas Wish Book in 1968. And it was expanded into like 600 pages. It was like, you must remember this, Bob. Did you have one? You remember having the Christmas wish book? Was this part of your family thing?
No, I remember the Sears catalog. I don't recall that one. I don't.
Well, a lot of times they said the kids would circle their toys they wanted in the catalog. They'd rip out the pages. It was like your everything, you know. It was just, they had everything. It was interesting to go back and think about how Sears became known for delivering everything to your door, really at a reasonable price of good quality. It was kind of the Amazon before Amazon existed. And you just go back and think, 1968, consumer habits were so set. People couldn't wait to start flipping through the Sears catalog at Christmas time. It was this wish book, and inside of it was hundreds of pages of anything you could wish for. And people would call Sears, apparently, and ask weeks before, like November, October, when's the wish book coming out, or when's the Christmas catalog coming out? And WTTW did a look back, Bob, at Chicagoans' memories of what people did when they got their Sears Christmas catalog.
I'm sure we didn't have the Christmas book in our house because I didn't get any Christmas or birthday presents.
Nothing. You were present-free? Like, what, you poor deprived child, Bob. There's so much to dig into there.
That explains a lot, doesn't it? Yeah, I know. The most famous reindeer of all, the invention of a Chicagoan. Anna?
Yeah. Sorry to burst the Christmas bubble, kiddos, but Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was an invention of a Montgomery Ward's ad man, Bob May, who created the story of Rudolph to boost sales over the holidays at the Sears stores. And sorry that Santa didn't select him like Donner and Blitzen, but he was loved nonetheless, that's for sure. So this is an interesting backstory, Bob. If you think about it, you go back into your time machine, 1939, Montgomery Ward's and Sears were in this major retail battle. And Christmas time was key, of course, as it is today for sales. So May was asked, go ahead and create a story for kids. That's just this wonderful story at Christmas time that you will put in, we'll offer for free in all of our Sears stores across the country. And he came up with Rudolph, and kind of interesting. RCA, the record company, came calling, and they cast Gene Autry to record the iconic version of the song after Sears had put out 4 million copies one year. It was so popular. Kids loved it, and it just became this wonderful story that everyone talked about. Then May just decided he was going to take Rudolph and move it to become his business and his whole world. And so he wrote books, and he licensed it for more songs, the story, and they turned it into the TV show, Rankin-Bass TV show, Rudolph, with the Abominable Snowman and the Island of Misfit Toys, which also came from a Bob May book. And it's just interesting. We have a clip here from Bob May's daughter, Martha. I think she talked to WGN a few years back about her dad's incredible creation, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, and that family, the May family, lived in Evanston, didn't they?
Yeah, had this huge house, six kids, and every year I never saw it, but they put up a giant Rudolph outside on the lawn. And I was looking for pictures of it because they said that it would light up its nose, and it was so huge, but people would travel from all around just to take a picture and get to see Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
And the Rudolph story became immortalized by an Illinois talent. Tell us all about Burl Ives.
Yeah, another Illinois connection to the Rudolph story, Bob. Burl Ives, the actor, accomplished singer who voiced the snowman on Rankin-Bass TV show, Rudolph. He was the narrator. You know, he led you through the whole thing, that warm, wonderful, reassuring voice. Ives was born in Illinois farm country and made a name for himself as a folk singer, went on to become well-known in Hollywood and beyond. And starting in December 1964, then every December from then on, Burl Ives would welcome you into the story of Rudolph as the friendly snowman. He became this icon, and some say, Bob, I don't know if you agree with this, but some say he became kind of the voice of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
When you heard Burl Ives on your TV show and Rudolph on the TV show, you knew that it was time for Christmas, and you got in the mood. We pulled a clip from the show itself, Burl Ives' part, and see if this brings back any memories.
Also this week in 1964, the Tribune's holiday recipe winner was announced.
This is a doozy. Okay, so 1964, they had this big contest where everyone submitted their favorite family holiday recipes, and the winner this year, in 1964, that year, was the hot avocado poinsettia pie. See if Marianne would approve of this one. You get a can of cream of celery soup, you add your frozen peas, you mix it up with cheese and eggs, and you get like a quiche. Pour it over biscuits.
Oh my.
And then on top, you put avocado slices and pimiento to get your red and green. And then you bake it. Try that at home.
It sounds
See
like
what happens with that.
Yeah, the electric chair special, the last meal. This week in
Everything.
Chicago history with Anna DeVlatis. Anna, thank you. Hope you have a great holiday.
You too, Bob.